Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 1025. The game day number, gosh, what is this now, 7 of Titans practice in the books?
Yep, day 7.
Day 2 in pads. 7. Day 2 in pads in the books. The Titans obviously were out there at training camp today, and I was out there. Caroline was out there. Julio Jones was not out there. And so I always ask this kind of question, right? Which is, you know, I've been around enough old football people in my life. I think we've all kind of been around enough old football people in my life. Ian, we spent a lot of time with old football people in our lives over the last couple of years. And how seriously do they take practice? Like the old football-y person that's like, you know, I tell you, everything that happens out here on the practice field. Like, ask Nick Saban how important practice is to him. How important will he tell you?
Extremely.
I mean, it's
might as well not play the game if you can't practice.
And then comes a player like Julio Jones. And Julio never practices. And we were told in Atlanta, yeah, Julio hasn't practiced for like 5 or 6 years. And then Julio comes here, and Julio, for the first week, was at practice, but he didn't actually practice. And then he did practice for a play, got hurt. Vrabel said it wasn't anything, you know, anything important, and now Julio's back to not practicing. And Mike Vrabel was asked about Julio today. Here's what he said.
How is Julio doing? Any concern with him?
You know what? We're going to be probably cautious with Julio. So the Julio watch, you know, will continue. We'll have a plan for him, but I would anticipate, you know, that he would be, that we would be all on the same page. You know, by the time the season started, you're going to see him out there at times. You're going to see him on the other field. And so he's played a lot of games, and that's kind of where we're going to be each and every day. So we can kind of all be on the same page, and I won't have to address it every day.
Subtext, don't ask me again. But Julio doesn't practice. So Vrabel's going to tell you, hey, you know, you get out there a little bit. He's played a lot of games. I said to somebody today, Julio Jones is a player. He's not a practicer. Derrick Henry apparently is a player, not a practicer. Now, I think Derrick, if you gave Derrick the option of practicing, Derrick would be the first person to raise their hand in the air and say, put me in a practice, coach. But he's a player, not a practicer. So we have all these old football guys that wear long sleeves and hooded sweatshirts in 95-degree heat that can't wait to stick that laminated play sheet right in their front shorts. And practice is everything to these guys. Hey, you build it on the practice field. Camaraderie, teamwork, effort, decision-making, accountability. You build it on that practice field. What about Julio Jones? Nah, he's good. I have a hard time buying into that. Like I understand it. Julio's old. Julio's been dealing with injuries his entire career. Julio's a gamer. Julio's always been a gamer. But I still have a hard time buying into this. Oh, yeah, don't worry about him. Then why does it matter for anybody else? Why does it matter that A.J. Brown practices? Why does it matter that Jayon Brown practices? Why does it matter that Rashawn Evans practices? I mean, Indy's got guys hurt in practice. Maybe they should have just not practiced, and then they'd have Carson Wentz and Quentin Nelson available to them. I mean, I'm serious. I'm not saying that like Julio's situation is going to be bad for the team, because I don't think anybody on the team looks at it like, well, Derrick Henry doesn't have to practice. Why do I have to practice? I don't think they go through that. But shouldn't we want Julio to practice a little bit more? You took on the man's $15 million salary. You gave up a second-round pick for him. And you're telling me, hey, we'll all be on the same page when the season starts. Remember the guy who didn't practice last year? Clowney. And remember, everybody's, Clowney doesn't have to practice. Clowney will be fine. They signed Clowney before the first game. Clowney showed up out of shape. And when he was grabbing his hips against Jacksonville and Denver and on the field, it was almost like, hey, it's okay. Because Clowney didn't have training camp. If Clowney had training camp, he'd be, you know, not awful. Well, Julio is there, unlike Clowney. But he doesn't practice, so he's basically doing as much as Clowney. And I guess I have a hard time with, you cannot tell me every day that practice is very important, and then the next day turn around and tell me, well, it's not important for these guys. And Vrabel will say, if you ask him, that everybody has a plan and that everything is important for the team and every day is a day to get better and everybody's plan is to help them specifically get better that day. But I don't know how I feel about the fact that Julio Jones just doesn't practice. Because at some point, don't you need to practice?
I think the biggest thing that worries me, and I hear you that, like, you know, Julio Jones didn't practice in Atlanta. Okay, well, he was in Atlanta for a long time. He and Matt Ryan had some chemistry. They had their thing going. I don't think Julio necessarily needed in Atlanta to practice. It worries me a little bit that this is year one. This is year one of Julio in this Titans offense, and I know it stems off of this Shanahan tree, but this is Julio Jones' first year in this offense. This is his first season with Ryan Tannehill as quarterback. It does worry me that he doesn't get those opportunities on the practice field to make those connections. I know that they've made him off the field. You can hear it in their interviews, and I'm sure that Mike Vrabel has made sure that Tannehill and Julio Jones have a certain connection off the field, but it's... You got to do it on the field, and that makes me a little bit concerned. And I would say, well, I'm sure that Vrabel would have Julio practice if that's what he needed to do, but then you bring up the Clowney point. That Clowney didn't practice, and that's probably exactly what he needed to do.
Oh, my God. Everybody tried to tell me I was wrong about Clowney, and it was the most right I've ever been about anything.
I have a really hard time subscribing to the belief that not practicing is the best thing for a player. I understand he's older. I understand that he's dealing with injuries, and I understand that he probably cannot go as hard in practice as maybe some of these younger, less banged up guys. I get that, but I have a really hard time believing that no practice is the best thing.
It's like wearing the mask, right? Like the mayor of Washington, D.C. came out and said everybody's got to wear a mask inside.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was at a wedding and she didn't wear the mask inside. And you can talk about it however you want to talk about it. You can couch it however you want to couch it. But anybody who's looking at you is thinking, no. You don't
practice what you preach.
You are just changing the rules to benefit you for your current situation.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong. I have no idea. But I'm just telling you what people are going to think.
Yeah.
You can't tell me practice is so important and then say, but Julio doesn't need to do it. For Derrick Henry, I get why Derrick Henry doesn't need to practice because all he does is run the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as far as being in shape is concerned, never been an issue for Derrick Henry in the 10 years that he's been a public figure. Being in shape has never been the issue for Derrick Henry. Knowing the playbook, we know he knows the playbook. Being in shape, I mean, even when he's not allowed to practice, he goes off to the side and he runs in the sand pit. Like, Derrick Henry's fine.
Mm.
Julio, I don't know. I don't understand how you can value practice so much and then not have him do it and then not have me be a little skeptical of the fact that the man never practices. And I go back to, I did a radio hit. Somebody asked me, they said, so how's Julio look at practice? I go, I don't know. He doesn't practice. So, I mean, I remember that I was against the Julio trade. And I'm not using him not practicing as a reason that I'm against it. Or that I'm excited to see him out there. Like, I'm excited. Week one, Julio, AJ, Derek, you know, I'm excited for it all. But I didn't want to do it. And I didn't want to do it because I was worried about the salary. And I was worried about the pick. And I was worried about the injuries. And for him to just not be out there, and then for him to go out there for 5 minutes and then get hurt and go off, like, that is bothersome here. Like, that does make me worry. Just because I'm excited about him doesn't mean that I have lost all of the caution that I had when discussing making this trade. A lot of media people will do that. They'll say, don't do it, and then it happens. Oh, it's a great move by the team. That's not me. I said don't do Clowney. I was adamant about it. I was right about it. Julio, we'll see, but I'm worried about the fact that the guy never practices, and will he just be able to pick it up at 31 years old? You know, it's easy just to get out there on the field and just start balling out when you're 25. It's another thing when you're 31 or 32 or whatever Julio is, and you don't have the experience in this offense with that quarterback, and you just didn't practice, and now you're getting in shape, and you're playing Arizona, and it's 3rd and 8 in the fourth quarter, and I need you to make this adjustment on the spot, and I need you to catch this pass. It's kind of hard for me to deal with.
I have a question for you.
Fire it away.
What do you think Nick Saban thinks about Julio Jones not practicing? Because I truly believe that you're a product of your environment, and I truly believe that you see bits and pieces of Nick Saban and, let's say, Derrick Henry. What do you think he would say to Julio Jones for not practicing?
So I think Nick Saban, And every interview Saban does, the first thing he always talks about, whenever everyone says, when anyone ever says, "Coach, congratulations on being named coach of the decade," or whatever, his response is always, "You know, this is about the players, mm-hmm. and they're the ones who've done the committing, and I just appreciate them, and you know, to have the teamwork and the players and the players, the player." All he ever talks about is the players. I think in this case, Saban would probably tell you something along the lines of, "Julio's accomplished a lot in his career, and there's no player who's more dedicated, but that every player has to do what's in the best interest of themselves, and clearly this is in the best interest of Julio." Well, but do I think
yes, he would say that to the cameras.
Would he want Julio to practice? Yeah, honestly, probably he would. Mm-hmm. Now, again, Vrabel, we used to call him Coach Cautious, but Vrabel is not a practicer. He is not – he wants guys – like, Lawan's not going to practice, even though Lawan is healthy. I had to put a video out on my Twitter the other day of Lawan versus Quesenberry in a little, you know, individual drill. Mm-hmm. The knee's fine, but he's not going to put Lawan out there. He's not going to put Henry out there. He's probably not going to put Julio out there. And if AJ or Kevin Byer pretends to be hurt, he's going to take them out as well. And that's where they are. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get your reaction on that. 615-737-1025. Hiller is celebrating grilling and chilling season this August. That's right, Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Get your free grilling must-haves when you make your home improvements, like a free Yeti Tundra cooler with the purchase of a new tankless water heater, a free Traegerwood pellet grill with the purchase of a new whole home generator, and a free Traegerwood pellet grill with the purchase of select new HVAC systems. Their work is backed by the Happy OB or the services free guarantee, and I know this because I've used Hiller at my home, and honestly, I can't even remember the last time I called him out. Because whenever I have an issue, Hiller comes, they take a look at it, they give it the thumbs up, they fix it, they're never here again, and I never have to call them to fix that issue before. They're great. I absolutely love them, and I promise you will as well. Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. These deals are only happening for a limited time, so you need to call as soon as possible. My friends at Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, they're proud supporters of the Preds and the Vols. Hiller, call the Happy Face Truck today.
I don't know how long Q is out, but let me tell everybody this, G. One, the most important position group on the field is the offensive line. Two, the most important offensive lineman for the Indianapolis Colts is Quinn Nelson. Not only in the run game, but protection up the middle for a quarterback who's been injured quite a bit. This catastrophic for me in Indy.
That was Marcus Spears and Quentin Nelson now out too. And the national media can stick their nose up Chris Ballard's butt all they want to. It's not doing something for me. But apparently, Caroline, we have angered the Nashville area Colts fans today.
Yes, the Colts fans in Nashville are coming out of the woodworks the past couple of days because, so, man, are they some loyal fans.
So you're on that text line, which is driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. What are the Colt fans mad at?
Well, one Colt fan texts in and says, "Foles is as terrible as your homer takes. It's not happening. You still drop games to Indianapolis in the years Peyton and Luck missed. Sit down, little brother."
Yeah, I mean, like the trash talk thing, like I worked in Louisville where you had Louisville and Kentucky, and that just doesn't do it for me on the radio. Like, you know what I mean? Like the idea of, "Hey, our team is so good and our guys and they're, That the idea of like the, you know, sit down little brother stuff, like, yeah, that doesn't really do it for me. That's,
ooh, scary.
That doesn't really bother me. Now, the question here is this, which is, he is right. The Titans have lost games. I mean, first of all, the Titans lost when Dan Orlovsky was the quarterback of the Colts in 2011. They should never lost that game. I mean, like the one game that Orlovsky won in his career, they lost to the Colts, and that kept him out of the playoffs in 2011. After that, when it wasn't Luck or Manning, the Titans were always bad anyways. Like, they were just bad. Like, the Wisenhunt years, they were bad. They lost to Josh Freeman, who the Colts signed off the streets at the end of 2016, which locked up the Titans acquiring the number one overall pick in the draft. They lost here to Brissett when Mariota spiked the ball on third down, which effectively ended, you know, any faith that Floyd ever had in Marcus was gone the day that he spiked that ball against Indianapolis. But I mean, I just don't see it with the Colts. Like, everybody makes the Colts out to be this just great developmental drafting team that gets every decision right. And yet, I look at it like this. If I am going to say that you are a great general manager, And then you can't get the quarterback right for 5 years. You can't be a great general manager in the NFL. Everybody talks about Indy as if they are a great team that is just missing a quarterback. Who's their left tackle? Their star player, the best player on their team, is now out 5 to 12 weeks. And Ian, you said Dan Dockich was on Darren Donick and Chase yesterday, and he said that with the Colts, whenever they tell you how long someone's out, to multiply it by 3.
Mm-hmm.
So that should probably tell you we should be thinking more about 12 weeks than we are thinking about 5 weeks. And I asked you this the other day, like, what is up with Frank Reich getting up at these press conferences and playing glass half full all the time? Like, who's he trying to impress?
Yes.
But apparently that's what they do. So I look at Indy, like, they're a solid team. But they don't have a quarterback, they don't have their best player, and they don't have a left tackle. So now I can't take you seriously. This is the NFL, people. I mean, you are what your record says you are. Chris Ballard is like 34-33 as a general manager. I don't know if it was the sympathy points everybody gives him from Josh McDaniels leaving him at the altar and Andrew Luck retiring in the middle of the preseason or what it may be. But he hasn't done anything overly special. That defense, the Titans played that defense. Every time they play the defense of the Colts, everybody always says that no team can run for 100 yards on this great Colts defense, and Derrick Henry did it twice. I'm not the Indy defense, and I'm not going to blame the Indy defense for the game in which the Titans could have scored 85 points because DeNico Autry and DeForest Buckner were out with COVID, and I think Derrick Henry had like 120 yards at halftime. And so that was a fluky game. But the Titans lost here against the Colts on Thursday night in November, because I was living in this house. They lost in November. And when they lost that game, I counted 30 points the Titans either gave to Indianapolis or didn't score themselves. A.J. Brown dropped a touchdown. Jadeveon Clowney let a guy go in the backfield. Steven Goskowski missed a kick that would have made it a one-possession game in the fourth quarter. I mean, like, all these different things happened that night. The Titans played terribly. They got two punts blocked, or they got one punt shanked, and then they got the next one blocked. Awful. Like, Indy's not special. Indy's a solid, okay team, and now they don't have a quarterback. At least when you're a solid, okay team, you have Phillip Rivers at quarterback, you have a chance. They're a solid, okay team, and Sam Ellinger might be the starting quarterback of the Indianapolis Colts. I told you, I listened to Indy Talk Radio. I tuned into Indy Talk Radio on Monday night, and they were talking about how Ellinger was outperforming Jacob Eason at practice. Stephen Holder, who covers the Colts for The Athletic, and I'm not going to read the article, but he tweeted this out with the article attached to it. This is not a prediction and it's not a hot take. Just accept this as observations of someone who has covered the NFL for a long time. Is this real? Can it last? No idea. I just know Sam Ellinger has my attention and I want to see more. And the headline of the article is Sam Ellinger's fast start adds entry to Colts quarterback picture. Okay. Okay. He says, and just to be clear, it's in the story, but people don't read carefully. The Colts have been very, very clear that Eason is the number one quarterback as of right now. So you got people saying, you know, Ellinger might be a fit. You know, I think it might. Oh. Okay. Dylan is up next. Thank you for calling the show. Thank you for waiting. Go ahead, Dylan.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to say, all these Colts fans that are, you say you hear them on the text line, call the phone. If you want to defend your trash team, go ahead, call up and do it. Your team sucks. Your quarterback sucks. Carson Wentz sucked before you ever
started. He does
suck. You have no left tackle. I mean, come on. It's over. Call it. If you really want to talk trash, call the phone line. I'm just so sick of this technology stuff. Anyways, that's all.
Well, thank you for your call, Dylan. My thing on this is I actually kind of prefer the text line. Honestly.
I like the text line.
Not to say that I don't love the callers. And Titans Monday will be calls. Like that Titans Monday, when we get back to Titans Mondays and reactions, we will get to it. But I kind of like the text line more. honestly.
If you want to share your thoughts, we are here to listen to them through via text or phone.
And we might not listen to them, but we are for the most part going to listen to them. But I stand by, like, I mean, nobody wants to know in August that their season is over. But I just hope that I would have the gumption. Like, and I believe I would do this. Knock on wood. Tannehill, Henry, and Byard go out tomorrow. I mean, season's over. Like, I'm telling you all, this season, and I like Logan Woodside, but the season is over. And I hope we can all admit that. I mean, the one thing I will agree with the caller, and I don't think Indy sucks. I just don't think they have any chance to win these hard games without a competent quarterback. But the hope on the 2021 Indianapolis Colts season was, if Carson Wentz doesn't stink, then what? And now he's hurt, and he still might also stink. And that's something that people just seem to forget, that there's like a legitimate chance that Wentz isn't any good. What's else in the text line?
So Ben texts into the text line, and Ben has got to be the biggest Colt fan.
Is this crazy Colt fan, Ben?
This is crazy Colt fan, okay. Ben. Ben texts in the text line and says, Titans only have Derrick Henry at running back. The Colts have Taylor, Hines, and Mack. I guess depth means nothing to you.
I mean, does depth mean something to me? Yes, it means something to me. Does it mean something to me when we're talking about the best player in the game? No. I mean, when we're talking about pass rushing, I don't know. When you play Arizona week one, I don't know who's behind Chandler Jones and J.J. Watt, but I know I'm worried about J.J. Watt and Chandler Jones.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, you can say, well, we got more running backs than you. Okay, but the Titans have the best running back in the game. So that's like saying the Titans had Mariota and Tannehill going to Kansas City. Kansas City had Mahomes and Chad Henne. I'll take Kansas City. Like, at some point, quality does matter over quantity. What else we got?
Jake from Clarksville texts in and says, Colts fan here. To the last caller saying the Colts suck, you're uneducated. They are the number two team in the division with two injuries. The season is not over. They will just be fighting for the wild card spot to start the season.
Okay, so let's think about this. If there's three wild cards now, right?
Yes.
Okay. Whoever doesn't win the North is going to get one of those. So Cleveland or Baltimore mm-hmm. is going to get one of those three. Who else in the AFC is getting a wild card this year? I have ruled out the Colts from competing with the Titans. But I am not ruling out the Colts from winning one of those wild card spots, because every single team, Dolphins, Patriots, Chargers, Raiders, every single one of those teams, I can come up with some reason why they will stink or some reason why they'll be good. So I can see that. I think there is something to that. But do I think Indianapolis is going to make the playoffs this year? Probably not. And again, Carson Wentz is the quarterback. Carson Wentz is never healthy. I mean, I still think Nick Foles is going to be the starting quarterback of the Colts. And I hate it for Indy, but I like it for me. 615-737-1025. We'll get to more of your reaction. But five takeaways from practice today at Titans camp. I got them, and you know I just want to give them. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Stillman & Company right here on ESPN 1025. The game, let me tell all the fine folks out there about something that is just very, very important to me and should be very, very important to all of you. This Friday, it's your chance to participate in the Nashville SC Click to Pick, brought to you by Camarena Tequila. If you guess correctly which player scores a goal in the game Sunday, you win a prize pack and a 4-pack of tickets to an upcoming Nashville SC game. Participate this Friday morning at 9:45 a.m. Stillman & Company, it's ESPN 1025 The Game, or streaming on the Game Nashville app. We got five takeaways from Titans camp to get to, but I should let it be known. First and foremost, this Saturday, catch a special Grand Prix edition of Chasing Checkers with Chase McCabe at 9 a.m. Brought to you by Firestone, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Mercedes-Benz of Music City, and European Collision and Repair. Chris Mortensen has tweeted this out, now has since deleted it, but he did tweet this out. Quote, Philip Rivers made it clear in a text he is going to finish coaching his first season at St. Matthew High School in Alabama before he would consider any opportunity to play again in the NFL this year. Rivers' text, quote, it's a long shot at best, but gonna be ready just in case. Will not even consider until our season is over no matter what. And like I said, somebody has to want you. Those who know Rivers agree the QB would consider only a playoff-contending NFL team that has lost its starter for the season. St. Matthew High School will be playing at least until the end of October, possibly a few weeks more if the Cardinals make the playoffs with a rookie coach. So that kind of squashes any possibility of Rivers going back to the Colts, right?
Yeah. Yes. That's done. I didn't know he lives in Alabama.
Oh, my God. How did you not know?
Oh, well.
You listen to the man talk?
Well, I mean, I don't think that I instantly thought Alabama.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Oh, yeah. He and his 58 billion kids, they all live in Alabama.
Yeah, there's so many of them.
So there's that on that front. Time now, though. Five takeaways from Titans camp today. Second day with the pads. And, of course, we start at the very top.
Number one.
First big takeaway is A.J. Brown. He is tearing it up every single time he catches a pass. Today, and I was standing right there when he caught it, he caught a slant from Tannehill on Christian Fulton, and he started running up the field with it. They blew it dead, and he goes, that would have been six. And I actually kind of agree with him. I mean, I know Julio hasn't been out there, and that's been somewhat of a concern, and I haven't seen the connection that I would like with Firkser and Tannehill at this point in camp, but Tannehill and A.J. Brown are ready to go. It was like the second practice, and I thought, okay, bring on the Cardinals for those two. A.J. Brown, and even in the individual drills the wide receivers do, A.J. Brown is very clearly the best one of the group. I mean, I'm not one to get too caught up into preseason hype of this guy looks good at practice, so this guy's going to be a Pro Bowler, or this guy's going to be. But there is something about A.J. Brown this year. I heard TD say it last week on the show, and this could be an all-pro year for A.J. Brown. This could be the year that A.J. Brown truly enters the elite category. From as a rookie, where he was a rookie of the year kind of guy, to an 1,000-yard back 2 years in a row, to or 1,000-yard receiver, to one of the best in the game, this would be the year. Now, A.J.'s going to get doubled this year. A.J.'s going to get doubled. And the key for a good player when you get doubled or when you take on great corners, got to beat him. But A.J. Brown right now is tearing it up. And he's only taking place in limited reps.
Number two.
The Titans have got to find a way on the roster to make room for Marcus Johnson, wide receiver number 88, and Chester Rogers, wide receiver number 80. Now, two wide receivers is not that big of a deal. But think about the investment. We know A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, and Josh Reynolds are all going to be there. That's three of what is either five, six, or maybe seven wide receivers. So that's three. Dez Fitzpatrick was taken in the fourth round. And even though Dez Fitzpatrick has not done anything through the first week of camp, I will say you're not going to cut a fourth round pick. And not only are you not going to cut a fourth round pick, but he probably has room to grow. He's not the only rookie who hasn't done anything yet. But he's going to be on the active roster. That's four. Then you have to think about special teams. Chester Rogers helps them on special teams in punt return, but they aren't special teams players, core special teamers, like Nick Westbrook-Akina or Racy McMath would be. So even if you take Rogers, because he's a punt returner, that's five. You're now going to not carry Marcus Johnson because you've got to carry one of those two guys, McMath or Westbrook, to be a gunner on special teams. And I hate that because I think Marcus Johnson belongs on the football field. And what I don't want to do is run into a situation like last season against Baltimore. Corey Davis goes out with an injury, and now it's AJ and the Seven Dwarfs. And I don't want that. Hollister and Batson are probably not going to make the roster, and they probably shouldn't. But if I were the Titans right now, I consider going seven at wide receiver so that I can get Dez Fitzpatrick into the group. I'm not going to cut a fourth round pick, and I'm taking Marcus Johnson and Chester Rogers because I think both those guys can help the Titans today. Rogers has 100 career catches with Indianapolis in his career. Johnson's got 42. I know that's not earth-shattering, but I think both guys belong on the roster. And if you have those five guys at wide receiver with Tannehill throwing them the football, you've got the best wide receivers in the NFL.
Number three.
Right tackle is a concern. Going into the season, We thought to replace Dennis Kelly that they were going to have Kendall Lamb, who they signed as a free agent, maybe to be a swing guy, maybe to be the right tackle, and Dylan Raidens, who they drafted in the second round. Vrabel today said Raidens is kind of far away. But then I asked him about what's going on at right tackle. Here's what Vrabel said.
You talked about Sam Brailo eventually returning as an option at right tackle. Kendall has not been at right tackle since really the beginning of camp. Why play him, practice him on the left side, and how comfortable would you feel about him on the right side?
Yeah, we'd feel very comfortable. I think that, you know, what we've tried to do is put the best five guys out there. And with this camp, with Taylor, with where he's at now, you know, that's been Quiz and Lamb. And Kendall is going to have an opportunity to compete at right tackle. He will. So will Ty. I've told him that. You know, and Quiz has done a nice job. He's battled, and, you know, I think he's a better player now than when he got here. So, you know, we're trying to work all those guys in and just try to find the best group for where we're at right now in practice.
So you notice he said Raidens was not competing for right tackle, and Quessenberry has given them the look they like. He's improved, and he's going to let Lamb, he's going to let Sam Brailo compete for the job. I think it's Sam Brailo and Quessenberry for the right tackle spot. I think Lamb, if he's going to make it, will be as the swing tackle if he beats out Quessenberry, if Quessenberry isn't the starting right tackle. That might have been a little too complicated. But I think Sam Brailo and Quessenberry make the team. Raidens makes the team because you're not going to cut a second-round pick, but he's not going to help you. And then Lamb probably doesn't make it, honestly. It's crazy because I thought he was going to be the starting right tackle. I don't think they have any interest. I think it is Quessenberry and Sam Brailo, and when Sam Brailo gets on the field, maybe he'll be the guy that they peg for right tackle, but right now, well, you heard what Vrabel said.
Number four.
I think that Tyrre Tart, number 93, and Laurell Murchison, number 91, have stepped in. They are clearly rotational guys on the defensive line. They were flashing when they weren't wearing pads, and now they are flashing a lot with the pads. Shane Bowen, I asked him about maybe rotating guys in more so that Jeffrey Simmons isn't playing 20% more of the snaps than Chris Jones plays at Kansas City. Here's what Shane Bowen said.
Last year, you guys had really high snap counts for guys like Harold and Clowney when he was healthy. With the addition of Simon, Autry, and the improvement in Tart and Murchison, do you perhaps maybe see rotating guys in that front seven more early throughout the game so that they're fresher in the fourth
quarter? Absolutely. You always want to be able to keep guys fresh, especially in the fourth quarter. As you guys know, like, every game is close in the NFL. Like, you got to be at your best in the fourth quarter. And developing that depth, like, we've seen flashes. But, again, it goes back to consistency with those guys, who we can count on come Sunday, play in and play out. But the more depth we have at those positions, the better off we're going to be, and we'll be able to roll and do all those types of things that ideally we want to be able to do.
They need to play Tart. They need to play Murchison. Those two guys keep standing out. They've got to play them. And that takes us to the fifth and final thing.
Number five.
Last week I told you I had seen enough from Blake Hawbeil as the kicker. They released him, brought in Sam Thicken. Today, I've seen enough from Tucker McCann. And this is not that McCann was bad today, though he was bad today. It wasn't that McCann was bad today. It's just the accumulation of his week as a kicker. He misses from 30-something. He misses from 40-something. He hits some of them. He misses. He's just not consistent. Today, there was a kick that he missed where, I mean, I thought it was going to hit me because I was standing underneath the goalpost. He missed it wide right, and as he was getting ready to kick, Vrabel blew the whistle and said, timeout. You know that feeling where they're about to end of the game, ice the kicker as they're getting ready to kick, so Vrabel blows the whistle as he's about to kick. Vrabel blows it, timeout, and then I watch it, and he misses it, and Vrabel said something along the lines of making the adjustment. So you got a free swing at it because they called timeout on you, so now you got to hit this next kick, and he did hit the next kick, but it was like 40 yards. And honestly, he sucks. So I don't think the kicker for the Titans is on the roster. I think they're going to wait to see who else gets cut around the league. If not, they'll go back to Goskowski. But I'm willing to give Sam Thicken more of a chance. I'm done with Tucker McCann. It's an experiment that's not going to work out. He's just not very good. time to move on. Those are our five takeaways. 615-737-1025. We will get a Nashville SC thought from our Nashville SC correspondent. Big Nashville SC game. We'll do that next. Plus Caroline, Stillman and Company, CSPN 1025 The Game. We're delivered by TriStar Moving and streaming on the Game Nashville app. Stillman and Company Sounds Baseball follows us with Jeff Him because big Nashville SC game tonight against the New England Revolution on ESPN 94.9. They got the big watch party going on at Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House in East Nashville. Our Nashville SC correspondent is Ian Safar. Ian, how do you feel about tonight's Nashville SC game, and how confident are you, and how big is it if we win tonight?
It is a big game. New England Revolution is number one in the Eastern Conference standings. Nashville is number three. There is a little bit of a lineup, I guess you could say, switcheroo, a little bit of lineup change for tonight with a little bit of a compact schedule this week. Looks like Captain Dax McCarty will not play tonight. He will have the night off, as will Hani Mukhtar. He will not be in the starting lineup tonight.
So, wait. We're not playing our best players tonight?
Not McCarty and not Hani Mukhtar.
Walker Zimmerman's playing tonight, right?
Walker Zimmerman is dealing with a hamstring injury that he got during the Gold Cup. So he will not play tonight as well. But the new star striker, Ake Loba, will start tonight for his first career start in the MLS. He's played. He has not scored yet, but he will get his starting debut tonight. Should be an interesting game. It's going to be tough. New England, like we said, New England Revolution is a solid squad. But, I mean, I wouldn't count Nashville SC out the way they have been playing.
Somebody's got to help me out here. If this is such a big game, why are we not playing our best players?
I think mostly just because of rest.
I hate
this. Load management.
This is so stupid. I mean, seriously.
Taking a page out of LeBron's playbook.
Like, I don't want to be somebody just to get on there and bash on a sport that they don't really pay much attention to, because I'm not a huge MLS guy. But we're resting our best players because they need to rest, even though this is a humongous game this year for the Eastern Conference.
And, yeah, what are they resting for?
And I don't understand. So there's a so we want to rest our best players in a huge game. And then you want to tell me it's a huge game. And there's a chance you could tie this game and
draw. Could draw this game. I'm trying to adopt more soccer vocabulary when I talk about soccer. On the pitch.
I hate this stuff. Caroline's.
Get in on the action. Put the money on the mahogany. What's on tap on the sports books? It's time to break it all down with Caroline's. Here on Stillman and Company
on ESPN
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Caroline Fenton is 3-5 this week. I'm 5-3. Let it rip.
Angels, Rangers, give me the Angels on the money line, and that money line is -184. Shohei Ohtani is on the mound for the Angels, and I feel like that's really all I'll have to say, but I will keep going. Rangers have Colby Allard out on the mound. He's got a 5.23 ERA, and he has allowed 19 runs on 20 hits in 12 innings.
He sucks.
So give me the Angels on the money line, especially since the Angel or since the Rangers have lost Joey Gallo.
Now the Rangers are terrible.
The Rangers are were bad with Joey Gallo. They are bad without Joey Gallo. They have one of the worst on base percentages since July 6th. When Joey Gallo made his, a little bit before Joey Gallo made his exit.
So. Angels on the money line, what's next?
You also have Royals at the White Sox. Give me the South Side, -1.5, -120. The White Sox have Lucas Giolito on the mound. He's got a 3.67 ERA through 21 starts. Easily one of the best pitchers in the American League. Kansas City has Carlos Hernandez out on the mound. He's got a 6.04 ERA on the season.
You just picked the good teams against the bad teams.
Yeah.
I'll take the White Sox on the money line too.
So we also have the men's 4x100 race tonight. And let me pull up those odds. Give me Jamaica +500. USA is favored -220, but I'm going to mix things up a little bit. Give me Jamaica +500.
Give me the USA. I believe in us.
For the home team. I believe that we will win.
I just, you know, I'm a big guy. I'm a big fan of Team USA. The Olympics have been really hit or miss for me right now. Because I think it's like the time difference.
I don't ever know if it's live or not. And I understand the live things have the live bug. But I wish that the things that weren't live said like previously recorded. Because I got real into the balance beam last night until I realized, wait, this is what Simone Biles won bronze in 2 days ago.
Give me Max Scherzer and the Dodgers making his first start. They take on the Astros tonight. I'll take the Dodgers on the money line.
Give me the Houston Astros on the money line.
That'll do it for us. We are out of here. We'll be back tomorrow at 2 o'clock. The Nashville Sounds get set for a doubleheader with the Toledo Mud Hens. Jeff Hem will have the call. That comes up right after us. And that big game against the New England Revolution is on ESPN 94.9. We will see you tomorrow at 2.